It's time to get moving, Toledo. Sponsored by 3D Wellness. Here's your host, Jim Poole.
Good morning and welcome to this week's edition of Get Moving Toledo. I'm your host, Jim Poole. Missed you guys last week. Kelly and I were out of town out west in Utah in Zion Canyon, hiking and enjoying the outdoors and some fresh air and getting away from the day-to-day madness of COVID-19 and got away from some people and just got a chance to enjoy the outdoors and saw some wildlife and some amazing scenery. But I'm back. I'm excited to be back on the air talking to you guys today. And I'm real excited for my guest, Dr. Gregory Johnston, weight management physician from Mercy, who oversees the bariatric surgery as well. Dr. Johnston, thanks for joining us.
No, welcome. Thank you. Thank you for having me.
So we talked a little bit off air. You're Michigan State educated and trained, ended up going from there to Detroit and then on to Akron. Is that correct?
Yeah, we trained pretty much through MSU through the whole thing, and then ended up going on to Akron and landed here in Toledo, somewhere in the middle.
Okay. Kind of what I want to do today is talk a little bit about, there's some amazing statistics for people that have had bariatric surgery, but I want to at least have you kind of, I guess, define for us what bariatric surgery is. We're going to get into the BMI scale, which I'm sure you'll get into in depth. But I want to know how that's going to relate to just our average listener and some of the takeaways that how you guys treat your patients, what they can utilize of the stuff that you do in their day-to-day life, just to be healthy, keep track of their weight management, their diets, things like that. Sound good?
Absolutely. I think we can have some good tips for you.
Great. So I guess first and foremost, tell us bariatric surgery. Tell us, like I said earlier, I kind of know a little bit about it, but I define it for me.
We kind of start with the patient's BMI and really where is that, you know, your height divided by your weight squared. Your weight divided by your height squared. And really we look at, you know, obesity starts at a BMI of around 30. And then after that, who's a candidate for surgery really kind of falls into two categories. Those with a BMI over 40, and that's kind of where we get into the what we call morbid obesity. And then those with a BMI over 35 with comorbidity. So you look at high blood pressure, diabetes, maybe sleep apnea. We're starting to include some new things in there, including fatty liver disease. And then we also talk about arthritis, maybe reflux. And the list actually seems to be adding by the day. So
you said diabetes, you mentioned it as one of the comorbidities. I know that I was reading, doing some homework before I got you on the show. There's a 10-year remission rate of, I think it's 36% or 40%, somewhere around there for type 2 diabetes. And, you know, first thing a lot of people equate with obesity is you're diabetic. Mm-hmm. Is that the big takeaway for bariatric surgery when you talk to a patient? I mean, I understand you define it as morbidly obese and things like that, but is that the biggest takeaway, is just the diabetes side of it? Or
so the biggest, a lot of focus, and I think that partly that's the society's trying to advocate for bariatrics, but diabetes is certainly one of the biggest problems we face as a whole. It's linked with so many things, shortening of a lifetime, coronary artery disease, you know, the list goes on. The link though with metabolic surgery and that the chance at remission of diabetes, I think, is really the key thing there. You know, you can have somebody come in on a Monday morning, have their gastric bypass. Maybe they're on several hundred units of insulin and they leave on Tuesday morning and they're not on any. So there's a big link there in terms of what metabolic surgery can do. The big thing I think I would push is the remission for diabetes is actually linked with how long you've been diabetic. So someone, say, that's only been diabetic 2 to 3 years or recently diagnosed is really who we want to get a hold of, because they're going to have a higher remission rate than somebody who's been diabetic for 20 years not that we're not going to help that patient and, you know, obviously decrease their insulin intake, et cetera. But we want to go for the full cure. So really we should be looking at those patients of 1 to 5 years. That's really who we want to target and get in there sooner.
So do you find that you said target? So I don't want to say target, but
but
I want to stay focused on that for a second, even if you didn't mean to say that. I want to stay focused on that. For simple, my question would be, yes, if you have that patient that's, you know, within the 1 to 5 year range of developing diabetes, but is a lot of your patient base, is it people that have suffered for a long time with uncontrolled weight, all kinds of health issues? I mean, you see some pretty bad patients, right? I mean, in terms of health is really poor. And then everybody kind of in between, is that correct?
You hit it right on the head there. Most of the patients, when they get to me, they've tried 10, 15 different diets, and maybe they've tried the same diets more than once. And they've yo-yo diet, you know, too many yo-yos. From that standpoint, they've gone down 50 pounds. Then they find that, okay, well, lifestyles change, maybe COVID hits, and all of a sudden they've gained that 50 pounds back. And that's really kind of where metabolic surgery comes in. We talk about weight loss surgery and everybody says, oh, you lose the pounds, you know, that changes everything. But it's actually a little more than that from a physiologic standpoint, where let's change your set point. We talked the show, I always kind of reference the show, The Biggest Loser. And people lost a lot of weight during that short time period. They put them through a pretty extensive exercise and diet program. And the problem is nobody talks about what happened to those patients afterwards. And they ended up metabolic cripples from dieting so much. To the standpoint, they can only eat so much or they continue to gain. They gained all their weight back in the long term. So how do we reverse that and find that new metabolic set point where when we do surgery, we keep their weight down?
So the show, Biggest Loser. So it is, it's essentially, I don't know how long the show is, but it's a series of weeks that it's basically they're on a crash diet. Is that right?
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, and I know you talked about diets just a second ago here, and you know, there's paleo and Hollywood, and you know, there's all the ones like all the, I guess,
keto and intermittent fasting, and it goes on, and they're all just really a variation of each other.
Yeah. And there's a lot of people, I mean, I know people that have had a lot of success, you know, getting weight off if that was their goal and keeping it off. But again, when you're shocking your system like that, now I'm sure to an extent you would tell anybody that bariatric surgery is a shock to the system, because you go from, you know, having those indicators on Tuesday, you have the surgery on Wednesday, they're gone. But you know, when you're really just all of a sudden kind of cold turkey, like I'm going on a crash diet and I'm going to go from, I've been eating McDonald's and other fast food and candy and everything, and now tomorrow I'm going to start a paleo diet, or I'm going to go vegan tomorrow to lose 20 pounds real quick. What does that shock to the system in that aspect, not bariatric surgery, but in that aspect, how negative can that be on a person, even psychologically, you know, physically, all that stuff?
So I think you hit it right on, hit a good point there. You talk about the psychological aspect of that. So you're going from one diet to the next. Sometimes this diet works and it works for a amount of time. And then, you know, somebody gets 30, 40, 50 pounds off and then things kind of stall down. And that's why is that? What happens in the body during that time period? And the reality is we're still learning those things. But again, that's kind of where bariatric surgery comes in, where we can get that weight down. And we don't really still understand why we get down to a set point weight. Typically, you talk about a gastric bypass. Somebody would lose 65, 70% of their excess weight. They're 100 pounds overweight. They lose 65, 70 pounds at 1 year. Why does it stop there? We still don't really have good answers for that. But when we look at long-term weight loss, say a bypass, 10 years after a bypass, 50% of people who had a surgery will, or I'm sorry, 80% of people who've had the surgery will still keep off half that excess weight. There's no diet that really comes close to that. So we're using the surgeries actually to learn about why the diets do or don't work.
Okay. So, I think we touched on this off air before we came on, but it's not just they come in, they have, and it's a big procedure, and I'm going to have you kind of explain that to us a little bit too. But I mean, it's a big procedure. It's not like you're fixing a meniscal tear or something like that. I mean, it's a major surgery. But they come in, there's lifestyle modification. There's other things. They don't just have the surgery check out and then you send them down the road.
So we actually, that's a good point there too. You said lifestyle modification. A lot of times when people come in and see me, they say, well, at the end of the meeting, usually the first question I get is, well, what diet are you going to put me on? And my answer the answer is usually kind of shocking to them, is I'm not going to put you on a diet right away. I want you to change your lifestyle. How do we create healthy lifestyle now, so that in the next 6 months when you're getting ready for surgery, you're able to succeed after surgery. And that's really where some of those pointers come in. Simple things, getting rid of carbs. Well, I call them liquid carbs, pops, sugar drinks, ice cream, et cetera. Those are the things that we really need to get out of someone's diet. How do we change someone that maybe they only eat once a day? And we really try to emphasize, maybe you should be eating 5-6 little small meals a day, especially after surgery. That's all you're going to be able to do.
By small meals, I'm sorry, I don't mean to interrupt you, but I want to make sure I get you to kind of touch on this. By small meals, 5-6 times a day, define for me what you would categorize as a small meal. I understand it's different for everybody.
Right. So for a bariatric patient, it's really only a cup to a half a cup of food 5-6 times a day.
Okay.
So we have this abundance of food around us. How do we, one, create what they need to have after surgery for health-wise, and then also keep them away from the bad things? How do we stay away from, you know what I mean? And so before surgery, we really focus on those things, adding some form of exercise into that daily regimen. And they need to start small. Most people who aren't exercising now aren't going to be to go out and jog 5 miles, right? But how do we, okay, we'll start with walking a mile. Then we'll move to walking 2 miles next week, 5 miles the next week. Okay. Pretty soon we're running a mile, and then we're running 2 miles. It takes steps, and people also have to keep track of those steps. And that's where they find their successes when they look back. You have to keep track of that stuff.
So when they come in, I'm going to go pre-surgery. They have the consultation with you guys or with you specifically. And you schedule the surgery. If they're a candidate, you schedule the surgery, correct? What happens to that person right then? We're going to have surgery on the 15th of August. From today to the 15th of August, what do you take us through that?
So most people actually, when they come in for that first visit, like I said, they have their insurance usually mandates 6 months of supervised diet and exercise. And that's where we try to make those lifestyle changes. And then, yeah, we're getting to right before surgery. Go ahead and say your question again. Sorry.
So, well, you actually corrected me. So it was a terrible question now that I think about it. So you had said earlier 6 months, and I misunderstood what you meant by that. Yep. So you actually spend 6 months with them prior to the surgery.
Trying to get them ready so that when they're done, they have those lifestyle behaviors, that skill base, so that they're successful afterwards, so they can keep that weight off.
Okay. So now we get to surgery date. My arbitrary date is August 15th for whatever reason. Sure. So they have the surgery, wake up the next morning. How is this something you stay with them for how long after this?
So our program is actually built to stay with them for a lifetime. That's the goal. And that's kind of the goal behind all of the surgical quality databases, where, you know, our accreditation, what we receive accreditation through, we receive accreditation to follow these people in the long term. In the short term, we see them a week after surgery, a month after surgery, 3 months, 6 months, 9 months, 1 year. And then at that point, we start going out to 6 months or a year. So that, one, they still know that they have to come in and there's some accountability. From that standpoint, I think that helps a lot of people out. Yeah, I know I have to see Dr. Johnston in 6 months. I have to, you know, continue to do these things that are healthy for me.
And you also mentioned previous that based on long-term data, it's about an 80% success rate of keeping at least half of the weight that they lose initially.
particularly gastric bypass on that one. Some of the sleeve is a newer surgery. We can go through the surgeries a little bit, but the sleeve is somewhat of a newer surgery. Actually has some roots here in Toledo. There was something called the duodenal switch, and it was a two-part surgery. And so that really is kind of Toledo's the beginning of a little bit of it. But the sleeve is still out there in terms of where we're at. We have like five, 7 year data. We don't have 10, 12, 15 year data.
Okay. I'll tell you what, hold that thought, because I want to talk about the different bariatric surgeries that are out there. When we come back, we're going to take a quick break. You're listening to Get Moving Toledo. I want to thank our sponsors real quick. State Farm agent Julie Spann Johnson, 3D Wellness, and Jim Pool Health. We will see you guys in just a couple minutes. Okay, thanks. So I kind of want to just, if you don't mind, tell us a little bit about, that was great, by the way. Tell us a little bit about the surgeries, and then let's go back into, like, what are some things that just Joe every day can do that you incorporate into your patient's lifestyle modification and things like that? That
sure.
Work? Okay.
Sure.
Is there anything you want me to bring up that I haven't?
No, I think we kind of hit on it. I would say we hit on who's a candidate a little bit, you know what I mean, just to make sure that kind of hits home, and then what the surgeries are, kind of how we look at that. Really, there's two ways. Who's a candidate is really someone with a BMI over 40, whether they have those comorbidities or not. Somebody with a BMI over 35 with comorbidities, diabetes, high blood pressure, yeah, high cholesterol, okay, sleep apnea. And then the other end is on that is the reality is only about 1%, or I'm sorry, less than 1% of people who can actually do this are actually getting surgery. So across the US, we only did about 250,000 of these surgeries last year. But that tells you that that's the real number in obesity. Less than 1% of people that are eligible for this actually go through it.
Wow. So the type of surgery I want to get to. So here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to come back. We're going to go right to that.
Sure.
So I'm just going to go right back on. So, okay. We're back on Get Moving Toledo. I appreciate you guys sticking around. We've got Dr. Gregory Johnston from Weight Management and Bariatric Surgeon at Mercy Hospital Health System. Thanks again for joining us, Dr. Johnston. And we were talking a little bit off air. Well, right before we went to break, I said, hold that thought, because I wanted to talk about the different surgeries that are available in terms of the bariatric surgeries. And then you were giving me some statistics when we were at break. And I also want to touch on the BMI. So I'll let you lead the conversation here. You start where you want to start, and then I'll make sure that we check the list off as we go.
Sure. So, I mean, really, who's a candidate? Somebody with a BMI over 40, whether or not they have comorbidities, and then somebody with a BMI over 35 with diabetes, high blood pressure, sleep apnea, high cholesterol. And then, you know, we talk about there's probably a group of people that are probably eligible to be determined, especially we talked about diabetes before, but somewhere BMI 30 to 35. I believe Cleveland Clinic actually did surgery on their nurses in that category who had diabetes, and they had some pretty positive results. So diabetes is probably going to sneak in there sooner or later, even down to a BMI of 30.
And I know that, you know, the BMI, I guess the two magic numbers that I keep hearing come out of your mouth are 40 and 35 for different candidates. Do you treat the BMI index as gospel? Or are there certain situations where you see somebody that's active, they're athletic, maybe they work out, maybe they're muscular, you know, their weight is a little bit more than what BMI chart says it should be, but, you know, and then they could fall into that category where it says you're overweight, but are they really overweight, or is it just the stress level on their organs, or what do you
think? So there's a lot of things there that probably play in there. There's genetic aspects, physiologic aspects, and then even, you know, kind of environmental aspects that those patients are facing there. But when we look at that, the BMI scale is not perfect, but unfortunately, it's what the insurance company mandates from that standpoint. They really kind of stick hard by those hard guidelines. Do you have a BMI over 40? Okay, you're automatic. You know what I mean? You'd be a candidate.
Yeah. I'm glad you brought that.
That's the hard part for our patients.
Yeah, and I'm glad you brought the word insurance up, because in my world with health insurance and life insurance, you know, that BMI chart plays a significant role in people that want to get supplemental coverage or life insurance, you know, whether they have to go through medical exam to get a life insurance policy or a health insurance, like supplemental insurance, if they are over that BMI scale, it's a knockout for them. You know, which sometimes you'd say that, again, that's why I ask that, is because I see people that I think are very fit and they're in shape and they might be on the quote unquote heavier side of the scale, but they're in fantastic shape, you know? So that's why I ask your opinion of it.
Yeah, no, the BMI scale does not fit all by any means. Certainly the, we would say taller patients and shorter patients, you can have a 350 pound, 6'6" guy. And that gentleman may be semi-healthy compared to a 5 foot, 250 pound lady.
Sure.
Right.
Absolutely.
And you know, it all probably comes down to our genes. But you know, the other thing you said there, you talked about life insurance, you definitely have to look at those things. Having a BMI over 30, you're looking at a shorter lifespan by 2 to 4 years. Go over 35, 40, 5 to 10 years. And you know, slipping back to bariatric surgery from that standpoint, we can probably get some of those years back by doing surgery. That's actually being shown. We can reduce risk of cancer, heart disease, probably degenerative disc disease later in life, a whole plethora of things that maybe we can make your life a little more comfortable 5, 10, 20 years later.
Wow, that's amazing. That's pretty strong data right there to say that, you know what, we can buy back a couple years. It's like early retirement, so to speak. You're buying back a few years of your life.
I can't think of any way to get time than other than speeding down the road.
Yeah, exactly. Right.
So that's the only other place I know of. You're right.
But that's a powerful, you know, marketing tool for you guys. Is like, look, like we can buy back a few years that you're not going to get if you don't do something, whether it's bariatric surgery or total lifestyle modification or a combination of both, like you guys do.
I think the cancer risk is great too. I mean, really been shown to decrease probably colon and breast cancer later in life. So, you know, there's your two of your biggest three cancers. So,
and it's just I never knew it. Like I said, I knew enough to, I guess, have a random conversation. But you know, I also, you never know how much until I have this conversation with you today. You know, just how much it can affect so many people and the population that it can have such a positive effect on. So I really do appreciate all this information you're giving us. One of the things I want to make sure we touch on in the last few minutes here of the interview is, can you tell us, yes, you're with them for 6 months prior to the surgery, we have the surgery, you're with them for a lifetime, or, you know, but let's say 6 months post-surgically, but whatever modifications you're making to that person, how can that apply to the everyday person that is on the BMI scale and they're either in shape or maybe they're a little overweight, but they're not a candidate for surgery, but they want to change some things about their daily routine and their diet and their health and their wellness.
So I kind of, you know, set up, I kind of abide by a few couple points here. This really goes to all patients, you know, whether they've had surgery or not. Just a couple things. One, water intake. Okay. You should be drinking at least 2 liters of water a day. Drinking water before meals, even 500 cc's before meals, have been shown to linked with weight loss. Other things, get some sleep. Okay. You really need somewhere 6.5-7 hours minimum a night. And getting enough sleep has been shown to decrease your risk of obesity, as well as probably decreasing your risk of heart disease, diabetes later in life. Next thing, exercise. Everybody runs out and says, we're going to do cardio, cardio, cardio. But you probably also have some weightlifting in there or resistance training, okay? And the reason for that is as muscle mass improves, so does your prevents insulin resistance. So the more muscle you have, chances are the less chance you're having diabetes or type 2 diabetes. Lastly, try to stay away from drinking, smoking, etc. And then last, track your progress. Keep track of where you're at. If you're building up to goals, that gives you the next goal to make. It also sees where you started and where you're at now.
Yeah, it's kind of a reality check, right? I mean, that's kind of what we talk about a lot with setting, you know, the very first episode I ever did back in January, we talked about, I used that episode as a platform to say goals, set goals, write them down, put them in front of your face, put them on your computer when you open up your laptop, put them on your mirror in the bathroom, put them on the refrigerator. You know, the more you look at it, the more you stay motivated. And how, you know, what do you see from the department and from what your guys' approach here in Toledo moving forward? How do you get out in the community and get the word out and get more people to understand what you do and take advantage of it?
Yeah, so I really think people seeing the effects and the short-term and more importantly, the long-term effects of this is really what's going to probably have the biggest impact on getting more people to surgery. But word of mouth really helps. Somebody does great, you know. I have success stories. You know, a lady came in, lost 100 pounds. She was 65, 70 years of age. You know, then she can go out and do something like go horseback riding, which she never did before, you know, and that's on her bucket list. Those stories, I think, are really what help promote, you know, improvement of life and surroundings is probably what helps us, you know, improve patients out.
So Dr. Johnson, tell us a little bit about the various surgeries that you can get that are categorized under bariatric surgery.
So we'll just hit on the most common. The first one's a gastric bypass. It's been around for about 40 years. Involves really just making you a smaller stomach, but then we divert your food away from that smaller stomach into your intestine. So your food's not going through the majority of your stomach. It goes from a little tiny small stomach at the top, about the size of an egg, 4 or 5 bites you're full, right into your intestines. And that creates a restriction as well as creates a malabsorption effect. It's been around for 40 years. It's kind of held as the gold standard procedure. And then we have the sleeve, which is a newer procedure. It's actually the most popular out there right now, about 70% of procedures. And it really involves making your stomach from something much wider into a very small cylindrical stomach. Say go from a kidney bean shaped stomach into something that's more hot dog banana shaped. So that creates restriction, but it also has some physiologic effects that are positive, like decreasing your hunger hormones.
Okay, guys, I hope you got a lot out of Dr. Johnson's talk today. It was really some amazing information in terms of, you know, just reverse the some of the terrible effects that, you know, obesity has on your body with bariatric surgery. And I understand that, you know, in a lot of cases it's extreme and it's not something that we're all going to be a candidate for, or quite honestly, we'd all want. But I think he, you know, also pointed out some pretty interesting things that we can do and take away that they incorporate with their, you know, standard of care for each patient, each bariatric patient that comes through their program. So hopefully you got something out of that. Like I said, I'm looking to have him on again here in the next, you know, 4 or 5 weeks. We'll have him back, and we have a guest. I spoke to him offline earlier. He's got somebody in mind as well. So.